My guest at this time is Mark Mix. He is the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. We want to get his reaction to Wednesday's Supreme Court ruling that determined non-members of public sector unions do not have to pay dues to those unions. And Mark, thanks very much for being with us.
Greg, it's a privilege to be on with you and to talk about this very, very large decision by the U.S. Supreme Court freeing workers across the country from being forced to pay dues or fees to get or keep a job with the very government that they work for.
This is the fourth time in the last 6 years in some form or fashion that this issue has come before the high court. Each of the three previous times, the challenge did not succeed. What changed in this particular case? Why did it succeed this time?
Yeah, well, the issue goes all the way back to 1977 when a case we litigated at the United States Supreme Court called Abood was decided on a split decision, a 6-3 decision, about how government employees had to respond to union demands for dues and fees. And the court at the time there said that, yeah, you couldn't be forced to pay for straight politics, but you could still be forced to pay for quote-unquote government services. And I'm using my finger quotes because there's a real question about what those services are. But here's the bottom line. Over the course of that last 40 years, this case and this issue has been in front of the U.S. Supreme Court not 4 times, but 6 times in various cases. And what's finally happened is the court, and they recognize this in the decision, that this regulatory structure is unworkable and that this case deserves what's called strict scrutiny in the legal process. And that means this is a question of pure First Amendment rights, that everything that government unions do is political because they're redressing government. They're telling government how to allocate their resources. And so we went from this Solomon-like decision splitting the baby to slicing the bologna ever thinner and trying to regulate it in even more and greater ways to this throwing up the hands saying, you know what, we're doing this wrong. Let's get to the basic question of the First Amendment. They did that today, and what they said is government employees across the nation have a First Amendment right against being forced to pay fees as a condition of their employment.
So Mark Janis is affected by this, and he's, I'm sure, happy about it. How many non-members of public sector unions who are government employees but have to deal with these unions on some level are affected by this?
Our estimate is this case will impact employees in 22 states and roughly 5 million government employees who labor under contracts that require them to pay dues or fees to keep their jobs. So the impact is obviously, it impacts Mark Janis right where his courage and where his principles stand, but it also impacts every other government employee at the smallest level of government to the highest level of government when it comes to state employees, and now they're all protected.
Briefly summarize why it's a violation of the First Amendment. That's what Sam Alito effectively said today. States and public sector unions may no longer extract agency fees from non-consenting employees. This procedure violates the First Amendment and cannot continue.
Yeah, that's exactly what I just talked about a minute ago, and I'll try to make it a little bit cleaner, and that is Alito, in a case that we litigated in 2012 called Knox out of California. We represented what ended up being a class of, I think, about 90,000 California state employees who had money extracted from their paychecks by the controller of the state to use to fund a political fightback fund by the unions out in California on some ballot initiatives. And Alito looked at that case, and because of the nature of the case, didn't have to get to the total First Amendment. But what he said in that case was, this is an anomaly. This is a really rare circumstance in America's jurisprudence that we give a private organization the privilege of forcing government employees to pay them to, quote unquote, speak for them. And when a government union speaks, they're speaking to a legislative body or a city council or a county commission. And that is influencing how these elected officials decide to allocate resources. Those are political questions. How do you spend resources, whether it be on payroll or whatever? And what Alito has finally said, he's applied the First Amendment to this speech, saying everything they talk about is political in the sense of redressing government. That's a core First Amendment question. That's what he addressed in the case. And the other four justices went right along with it. They all signed on to the same brief that said the same thing. And they believe now, after a regulatory structure that tried to parse this thing over the last 40 years, they finally said, it's no good, it's all political, and therefore the First Amendment protects it.
Yeah, a much more sweeping decision than a lot of the other Supreme Court decisions we've seen on other issues, and even this one, this issue, as you've just pointed out over the years, which the court generally has a bent to do, but in this case, a much broader decision. Justice Kagan, one of the dissenters today, essentially saying, quote, if it, meaning the majority, wanted to pick the winning side in what should be and until now has been an energetic policy debate. Today, that healthy, that democratic debate ends. The majority has adjudged who should prevail. Your reaction?
Yeah, well, Justice Kagan doesn't realize that we've had literally hundreds of lawsuits across the country at every level of government on this issue, and every level of the court system on this issue. And if she probably hasn't seen the frustration from justices across the entire country who've had to try to sort out what it is the court said in the Abood case of, oh, what's in, what's not, what's chargeable, what's not. So this robust debate that she talks about is just ridiculous. This is about a scheme that union officials have enjoyed for 40 years and given them a privilege to extract money from workers who never wanted them, never asked for them, and never voted for them. And now that's over. And, you know, Justice Kagan in the oral arguments back in February, our attorney, Bill Messenger, who argued the case, was interrupted by Kagan, which is her privilege as a justice of the United States Supreme Court. She asked him, well, what about the reliance issue, this notion that this has been going on for a long time? Well, what we said and what our attorney said is you can't rely on anything that violates the First Amendment. I mean, if you've relied on it in the past, it's been wrong, and they got it right this time. So to Justice Kagan, you know, the needs of the many don't outweigh the rights of the few, is in this case what I would say to her.
Two very quick questions before we let you go here, Mark. First of all, one could argue from the union perspective, look, these people are non-members, but as a result of our collective bargaining efforts, they still benefit. So shouldn't they pay us something? What would you say to that?
Well, you can talk to legions of government employees who don't think that the union benefits them at all. In fact, sometimes when teachers are given like Teacher of the Year awards and they would be given stipends because of the reward, and the union blocks that. We had a situation in North Dakota where we represented some public employees that were actually given a signing bonus because they were math and science teachers. The union stepped in and denied that. I mean, this idea of benefit is, I mean, if you want to use a generic beneficial term, then it's hard to parse that. But is it a benefit when you do 5 widgets a day and someone else does 1 widget and they make more money because they've been there 1 year more than you? Is that a benefit to you? No. And we have plenty of cases that have indicated that there is no benefit here. And the fact of the matter is, if these workers could speak for themselves, oftentimes many of them would do better than the monopoly power that union officials have had over them and continue to have over them in states that allow them to be the only voice for workers in the marketplace.
Quick two-parter to close. Number one, what's the next battleground? You've got 28 right-to-work states and a big win here at the Supreme Court. Where's the next battleground? And does this gut unions?
No, it doesn't gut unions. In fact, anyone who wants to join a union and pay money to a union can do that under this decision and can do it in the 28 states that have right-to-work laws. Nothing stops them from giving their entire paycheck to the union if they believe that's in their interest. So it has nothing to do with gutting the unions. There is a place for unions. There will be a place for unions. They just need to provide services today. The next step is to end the force fees across the entire country, whether we do it state by state or whether Congress goes into a 1935 New Deal piece of federal legislation that Roosevelt jammed through the Congress and jammed through the U.S. Supreme Court that forces private sector workers to pay dues to get or keep a job. We can strike that down, too. That's the next battle.
Well, I know there's a lot of smiles in your office today, Mark. Congratulations on the win, especially since you made the arguments, or your firm did anyway, at the U.S. Supreme Court earlier this year. Congratulations, and thanks for your time today.
Greg, a privilege to be on with you. Thanks for your interest in this issue, and there'll be more on it, so stay tuned.
Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.